Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Swings, hits it high and deep and gone. Still going back. Oh! Out of here. Welcome to the big leagues.
Deep to center field and it is gone.
Wow, his first big league swing is going to be a grand slam home run. Swing and drive. Mountain right. Welcome to the show.
The day's finally here. It is top 100 day on the call up. I'm Arm Layton. He's Jack McMullen. And we've been waiting for this. I've probably falsely teased it like 13 times, but I do that every single time. I feel like listeners of the show have to have like zero trust with my timelines at this point. I apologize for that, but we did it. We're here and we got it out before the beginning of the season. I will say it's because I end up tweaking things and overthinking and adjusting and diving into more things and trying to gather more information. And then Jack also asks me like annoying questions such as, what was your favorite one that you asked me? Johnson or Thomas Ajayi or something like that, which is like guys who are opposites. And then my brain splits.
So my favorite was we were sitting at dinner with our video czar, Will Cohen. And I said, hey, Aram, Yankiel Fernandez or Enrique Bradfield Jr.? Like, and you were pissed. You were like,
I told you that's illegal. It's an illegal question.
It's an illegal question.
Because those guys, like in terms of value, could be almost, I think they're almost like identical in terms of value, but they couldn't be more opposite in terms of the kind of player they are.
So that's the thing. Like I need to ask all the illegal questions. Also, one more thing before we really get into it. You make fun of me for taking naps. I love naps. Huge nap guy. Are you going to take a nap now that this is done?
We still got 15 team prospect lists to do, but there's no rush on that now. So yes, I will take a nap.
Okay,
but for those who are wondering, well, what about my favorite teams list? We got you. We're coming. Yeah, that's coming as well. And that'll be the focus through the first month of the season. We'll get, you know, maybe 2 months, we'll get the rest of those out. But yeah, I'm looking forward to that nap and just sitting down and not having to think about the list for a little bit and just watching these guys play. And then we update it at the midseason.
Good. Real quick, before we get into the top 100, a couple of guys, Monday was a big day for roster decisions, like very notably. And there were some guys that didn't make the team. I just mentioned Joey Weimer, who has graduated from prospect ranks, but Weimer didn't make the Brewers, which is crazy. Robert Gasser, who we've been pounding the pavement, should not make another AAA start. Guess what? He's going to make another AAA start, it seems. But Jared Jones in Pittsburgh made the team, which was fun. And then obviously you've got the notables. Chorio and Colt Keith were going to make the team regardless.
They got paid
big money. Yeah, they got paid to make the team. But I want to go through Jared Jones.
And, of course, Jackson Holliday, though, not making it as well.
Holliday didn't.
One of those things where we talk about on the Just Baseball show and then we might forget. So I don't know if you were going to go there, but I was just wanted to say before I forgot.
Yeah, I was going to go kind of rapid fire. I was going to go Jones, Lankford, Holliday, and then there was another Couser.
Okay, then I'm just an interrupting ass. Go ahead.
No, you're good. Jared Jones makes the Pirates. That's awesome. And I mentioned it on the Just Baseball show. If he didn't make it, then it was clearly never an audition in spring training for that four and five spot. It was an audition, and he made it. Good for him. I think it was 16 and a third scoreless, or at least no earned runs. I think it was three unearned runs. He pitched like a man possessed. How excited are you to watch Jones throw?
I was going to turn that question on you, being that, you know, you've got to know the guy a little bit. You know, we've had an interview with him, you know, from you just chatting up with him at the field, and yeah, definitely go check that out from a few months ago. But I mean, I'm just excited to see that intensity on the mound. Yeah, that bully fastball, the slider was unbelievable through spring training. I think we still have the same third pitch question, but the thing is like that's going to either rectify itself at the big league level or not. I don't think any more time in AAA really mattered. And I think he can really carve through some big league lineups with the fastball slider. So I am so excited. We're going to be talking about him plenty, but several episodes ahead, we're going, you know, 15 prospects at a time as we're breaking down each of these, in case you didn't notice that in the title. So we're still far away from talking Jared Jones to prospect, but I'm really excited to see Jared Jones at the big league level. And he makes this Pirates team better. And it seems like they're focused on being better this year.
Well, in the yes, they are. And there's also intrigue every fifth day, which I love. And, you know, like that's something that I guess you could have been lacking if they did like the opener thing. And I guess that was the other plan. And like, hey, Bailey Falter is going to go three today. Do Pirates fans really want to tune into that? I don't think so. I think they'd rather watch the little kid who like throws 100 miles an hour. He's 21 years old, 22 years old, and he's throwing 100 from like 5'11 and 180 pounds soaking wet. So it is very fun. Wyatt Lankford is the opposite build. He is, what was he? T-Rex. But he makes the Rangers opening day roster. And I loved the video of Bochy and Chris Young sitting in the clubhouse with him and telling him in Bochy's manager's office in Arizona, because you could see on Wyatt's face that he was happy, but he doesn't really seem like a hugger. Like he didn't jump out of his chair and like give anybody a hug. He was just like, thank you, coach. Like that kind of thing. And then like shook Bochy's hand and shook Chris Young's hand and was out the door all good. It does feel like business as usual for him, and we may just come to expect the unexpected with Wyatt Lankford.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where, I mean, he 100% makes this team better. And when you're a prospect who has minimal minor league experience and you make the defending world champions better, what does that say about your talent? What does that say about, I mean, it's not like they had a gaping hole in the outfield. There's guys that, you know, could struggle. We'll see what happens kind of thing, but they have plenty of options. There was never a hole. Lankford just grabbed a spot. He leapfrogged people. And I mean, what he did this spring was outrageous. I think the way he goes about his business also was a big reason why he got this job too. You're not just bringing a kid in here. Same with Evan Carter. You're not just bringing a kid into a World Series club littered with veterans and you know, some potential, you know, Hall of Famers. If they're going to piss people off, right, and rub guys the wrong way, or have like a Tristan Casas type of situation with the Red Sox, like you got to be a pro's pro. And Lankford is just exactly that. He carries himself like a vet. He plays the game like a vet. And then the tools and the excitement is just adds a dynamic aspect to this team that they're going to be lacking a little bit with Seager out. So I think it's nice to have that added to the fold too.
So a lot of people thought Zach Neto was rushed, like super fast-tracked, right? 217 minor league plate appearances. Wyatt Lankford gets to the big leagues in 200 plate appearances. So I think just under 50 games. Neto was at 48 minor league games. I think Lankford was like 44 or something. So Wyatt Lankford in 17 fewer plate appearances is there, and nobody's saying they're rushing him. He's earned every single promotion, which is really cool.
Yeah, I think that's that. You nailed it there. Not one person saying, oh, is this too quick? You got to really perform to not have one person saying that.
He's OPSing like 1150 in the minor leagues too. So he was not bad at any stretch. Two Orioles real quick. Jackson Holliday doesn't make the team. Colton Cowser does. Let's start with Cowser. He probably doesn't have everyday reps in that lineup available, but they feel very comfortable with him being the fourth outfielder that can play all three outfield spots, it seems.
That's the big thing, I think, right? Because you want to make sure that you have somebody that can plug into center field if you know, Cedric Mullins goes down, which has been a pretty recurring issue, unfortunately. So yeah. I think that's an aspect of it where you look at Jackson Holliday, sure, you could really make a strong case that he belongs in the team. But we went into spring training kind of saying, I thought that it was more of an outside chance looking in terms of Holliday finding a spot on the team, just because it was hard to find everyday reps. They have other things with the roster that they kind of need to settle before they just bring Holliday up, because that forces some other issues. I think you can call it service time manipulation. I'm sure that helped inspire the Holliday decision a little bit, but I think you could have justified it without the service time implications. And, you know, I don't know if the Orioles were as keen on that with the new ownership and everything, but with Cowser, it's a different situation. He's not going to play every day. He also can plug into center. I love the adjustments he's made, and I think that's a big reason why he also made the team. But it's different than a Kerstad, than a Mayo, because one, you want a guy like Mayo and Holliday getting everyday reps. You don't want them sitting out at all. And right now they might be a little bit. And on top of that, Cowser, I think, feels more of a need. They are good on the infield. It's more of a Jackson Holliday makes us better type of situation, which I think they'll realize in a month or two. And there's some things that Holliday can work on, but with convenient
that they'll realize that in a month or two.
Yes, of course. But I do think that, like, look, he swung and missed a little bit more than we're used to. Like there's some things that I'm sure defensively he can continue to work on. Again, I think he should be on the opening day roster. I just don't think it's as egregious as some of the other instances that we've seen. Doesn't defend it. Doesn't make it okay. But I think, you know, considering how fast he's been tracked, it's a little different. And with Kowser, he's filling a role that's not going to be an everyday role unless he just continues to mash, which I think he can. But yep. You're okay with Kowser playing 3 days a week because you're not worried about stunting the 24-year-old's development. You're worried about, you know, affecting the development of your newly turned 20-year-old number one overall pick who has been unbelievably good. He is raked in spring training, but there has been some aggressiveness. There has been some swing and miss. And, you know, I think with the defense side of things too, they don't want to just throw him into the fire. I think he would have been fine. I think he would have been pretty good. But again, I think this isn't like a Chris Bryant work on your defense thing quite as much as maybe some are making it out to.
I can totally see that. Two more O's that actually just came to mind. For the love of God, trade Kyle Stowers. And then I saw Connor Norby tweet yesterday, year 3 exclamation point. He's going into his third year in AAA. Connor Norby, we can't be doing that. Like, move them for pitching. Why not?
I would love that. I mean, Norby, the guy's just a hitter. We heard Chase McDermott talk about it. He's just an automatic. It's bats a ball. Like, he just hits. I don't need to see that guy in AAA anymore. I've had enough.
Him and Stowers, it's crazy. And then entertain me for a moment because I am in hog heaven right now. For however long we get him, Paul Skeens is coming to Indianapolis. I was like doing backflips when I saw that announcement.
I mean, I was hoping. I mean, again, another one of those instances where I would be pumped if he was at the big league level. But man, I'm so excited that he's in AAA going to Indy because, one, I get to hear your voice on the call with him. But also, he's been working on some things. Like, he already has been dominant, but now we're seeing two variations of a slider that he didn't have before. He was more of the sweeper. Now he's throwing two different sliders. He's throwing this pitch he calls like a splinker, basically, that looks like a two-seamer that basically just dies and has crazy horizontal runs. So he's like debuting new pitches and doing some new things. And I think it's a perfect setting for him in AAA to really unveil that. However many starts you get him in Indy, it's going to be an absolute blast to watch. I hope the fans pack it in to Victory Field because, I mean, this is a really unique opportunity to see a guy that could win Cy Young's. And I think he's going to, you know, really show out there in Indy right away.
It's just one of those, man. Like, I remember 2021, I thought I was going to get CJ Abrams in Fort Wayne, but in turn he goes to AA and he breaks his leg. I was like, oh, damn. But year one in Indianapolis, I get O'Neill Cruz. And I'm like, oh, this is cool. He's kind of the focal point of minor league baseball in a little way. I think Skeens more than O'Neill Cruz. He is the focal point of AAA baseball right now. And it's not often with all the quad A guys that you have that your AAA debut, you may become the best pitcher in AAA. And I think that's who Paul Skeens is going to be. I think he's going to be the best pitcher in AAA as soon as he starts, whether it be opening weekend or the following week.
And I love it because fans now have StatCast access to AAA. Yes. You know, you can go on Savant and see that. And I mean, even if you can't watch the game, you got to be dialed into just the Savant numbers from Paul Skeens, you know, when he has his couple starts or however long he's there. But really excited for the folks of Indy. And it's a great point. Like, they're getting a lot of fun, fun, maybe future faces of the franchise type of players. It's rare that you get that back to back where, you know, usually you only have one face. You can make the case that O'Neill and Skeens could be, you know, kind of sharing that very, very soon at the big league level.
100%. All right. Without further ado,
let's get into the top 100. 100 to 86 is the numbers that we're going through today. And of course, you can follow along with the link in the episode description, which, as always, we'll be doing that through every single one of these episodes. And if you're on YouTube, you'll see the list right there as we're sharing the screen and going through it. And of course, when we're done with the top 100, we will do the just missed, because I know that's always a question, like who just missed, and we'll wrap up with that as well. But at number 100, this was a Jack McMullen push. This was one that, you know, we were at the gas station, and you're like, all right, now that we have a moment, I'm going to need you to watch more Hurst and Waldrip. And you just kind of forced me to watch more Hurst and Waldrip, more Hurst and Waldrip, more Hurst and Waldrip. And I appreciate you doing that, because I'll give the whole outlook and then you fill in, you know, kind of the blanks here for the Braves first round pick in 2023. I mean, stuff wise, you can understand why he's a first round pick. And even though he was underslotted at the 24th overall pick, you know, he was roughly late first, early second type of grade for him. I think that's where most were expecting him to go. Braves love drafting these types of guys late in the first, especially if they can save some money. The numbers aren't nearly as good in the minor league, or excuse me, in college baseball as you would expect for a guy with his stuff. Yeah. And it has nothing to do with his splitter. and has nothing to do with his slider. His splitter is a double plus pitch. His slider is a pitch that already flashes plus, especially after he scrapped the curveball. My concern were two things. And you know, this is what we talked about. The fastball, you'll see plus grades out there, and I get it from a velocity standpoint, but the shape, it's not good. It is pretty just straight as could be. Seems like hitters pick it up really easily. And I mean, you had college hitters, despite it being upper 90s, hitting well over 300 against it. Then in his pro debut, continued well over 300 numbers, not very good whiff rates. And then the command is the question. So you have fastball quality and command. Why do those things, I'm not going to say why do they not matter? Of course they matter, but why are they not so concerning that he's not a top 100 prospect, Jack?
Because he throws in the mid to high 90s with his fastball. And it does feel like in good organizations, fastball command is one of the easier things to teach nowadays. So you're banking on a guy learning fastball command. And even if he doesn't, he's got a splitter and a slider that could slot him into high leverage moments for a team that wants to win the World Series this year.
Yeah.
So that's why, like, he is Matt Brash in a nutshell. And hindsight's 2020. Like, I think everybody going into the 2022 season would have had Matt Brash on the top 100, knowing that he could turn into what he has turned into.
We had him.
Yeah, we had him. And like, the thing is, you knew that he could fall back on being an elite reliever. And guess what? Like, he is an elite reliever. That was the fallback plan. Hurston Waldrop is very similar to the Brash and DL Hall cut, where you've got no idea where it's going sometimes, but it's so gross. And I showed you like how ridiculously over the top that guy is. He's a freak athlete that somehow gets on top, and that splitter might be the best north-south pitch in the minor leagues.
I'm with you. I mean, when we talk about the numbers too, it was arguably the best pitch in college baseball. I mean, you got the Skeens slider and of course the Skeens fastball just because of how he overpowered guys, but that splitter, I mean, no one could hit it. But then he put up the same numbers in the professional ranks too. That always is, you know, something that you want to see right away, right? Like, is it going to dominate to the same clip, especially with a guy that, you know, has to mask the fastball a little bit. I love the point you bring up about the, you know, the delivery, and he's so athletic. And that was another thing that you pointed out. It's like, you figure he can maybe find a way to backspin the baseball a little bit more, get a little bit more ride to it. Maybe he leans into more of a cut ride. And if he does that, cause that's where it's closest to is that cut ride shape, but it just doesn't have the cut. So right now it's just kind of flat. Like, it just doesn't really have enough life to it. It's almost like a cutter that doesn't cut. So if he can lean into that a little bit more, yeah, that could be something that helps the fastball. But you mentioned, like, if the command gets better, if you're locating 95 to 97, it's not going to get bludgeoned because it's still hard. The problem is right now it's the shape, and then he's missing over the middle a lot. He's falling behind in counts. He's got to go back to the fastball. There's a lot more hitters counts. And I think that makes the fastball play worse than it maybe is because he's falling behind in counts. You have guys that have that fastball that's a get out of jail free card because it's okay. Yeah, you know, the fastball's coming, but this isn't invisible. You're not going to hit it. He's not like that. So if he's not getting ahead of hitters, it only exacerbates the issues with the fastball.
Well, and the thing is, he does have a get out of jail free card. It is the splitter.
Yeah.
So like, while it's not the pitch that he can turn to 60% of the time,
that's
it is a pitch that, like, hey, when shit hits the fan, just splitter, splitter, splitter. You can get out of pretty much anything.
100%. And I love the Brash comparison because I think his floor is really high leverage reliever, swing man, just Swiss Army knife type. But I think there's a great chance that he settles in as a volatile starter. And that's why he's the top 100 guy. But the volatility is why he's at the 100 spot. The opposite of volatility is number 99. And it's Enrique Bradfield Jr., the Baltimore Orioles, a guy that when we went through the Orioles system, I told you, just the more I dug in, the more he grew on me offensively because, hey, look, there's minimal impact. It was a disappointing junior season from him at Vanderbilt when you look at it from an offensive perspective. But right there, I think aside from Pete Crow Armstrong, I think it's him and Victor Scott that are like right there as, you know, 2A and 2B as the best defensive center fielders out there. And, you know, there's a chance that Bradfield could end up being right there with PCA too. I think he's can do a lot of the same things that PCA does, just doesn't quite have that arm that PCA adds to the fold as well. But having the great bat to ball, having the elite feel for the strike zone, like he borders on passive, but I'm okay with guys like Bradfield being passive. I don't want Emmanuel Rodriguez to be passive because you got to do damage. You got to swing to do damage. Yeah. With Bradfield, it's like single walk, kind of the same thing. You can go deep in count, spoil a bunch of pitches, and just grind. And it's okay for a guy like Bradfield to be passive. So that's what he does, and he's good at it. We saw him in the spring breakout game lay down a bunt, and he could have backpedaled to first base. Those are the things where it's like he's going to be able to just like scheme his way into a solid on-base percentage, even if he doesn't hit a ton. The power is obviously going to be well below average. He may have seasons where he doesn't even hit a home run, but I still see some room in that frame. Like he's got some broadness to him. Like he's skinny, but there's a bigger, like wider frame. So if he can put on a little bit of weight, you know, maybe there's a little bit more impact there and it can be more gap to gap. But when you have 80 run, a guy that could steal 100 bags, you have elite defense in center field, the ability to walk and good bat to ball. Like he may never make an all-star game, but he's such a high probability big leaguer that he's a top 100 prospect.
So we beg 80 runners to get on base. That is the whole idea behind an 80 run tool. Can you get on base at a clip over 310? Esteori Ruiz had a 309 OBP last year and he swiped 67 bags. It's the Billy Hamilton conundrum, man. It's like every 80 runner, it's like, are you going to get on base enough to be valuable? No, with Billy. Seemingly no with Ruiz, and like 67 bags is a ton and he's a big leaguer, but like he could be an all-star if he got on base at a 350 clip. Bradfield seems like the type of 80 runner that can get on base at a 350 clip. College OBP in his career, and like obviously it's college, so it's going to be drastic, but a 426 OBP. His first 25 games in the minor leagues, a 473 OBP. His 11 game sample out on the Cape, a 348 OBP. He hit under 200. He's always getting on base. So if this guy can be a 350 OBP guy, his value skyrockets.
I love that you brought up Hamilton and Ruiz, because both of those guys did not have great approaches at all, or still don't. Ruiz, it's not great. They're aggressive. They would swing a lot. And that happens with the speedy guys. It's almost counterintuitive, but they have such a good feel to hit. They think they can get to anything. Let me slap it on the ground and run. Yeah. I mean, these big league infielders, man, even if you fly, they will get you out. They're quick. They got rockets for arms. They know how to play you. They know your spray charts. You can't just do that as much. So the fact that he can walk a ton helps. You know, that mitigates the, I'm just going to slap a ground ball, you know, 1-0 count and ground out. So that helps a ton. And then I just think he's a better hitter than those guys. I really do. I think there's just more offensive upside there than those guys, especially Billy Hamilton, but Ruiz as well. I mean, it's just a much more advanced bat at this stage. And I think just the bat is just more projectable in general, just from the contact standpoint and the approach. So I feel really good about him being a big leaguer. And if he's an OBP machine, makes enough contact, which we know he's going to do, it's a borderline plus hit tool at this point, and plays elite defense, he could back into 3-win seasons. It's like, I think he can be everything that the Guardians were hoping Miles Straw would be when they gave him the contract. Because Miles Straw's great bat to ball. I think it's that elevated version of that. Like the good year that we saw from Miles Straw is kind of what I see Bradfield settling in as.
And that's a top 100 prospect in baseball, while Miles Straw is making $4.5 million to play for the Columbus Clippers.
Which is crazy.
Crazy.
Again, we're just like kind of shifting to a different type of player now, which is it makes these lists so... This is why these lists take so long. Because I got to compare Jacob Melton of the Houston Astros to Enrique Bradfield Jr. Jacob Melton, we actually got a chance to see an additional time, which was nice, in a big league spring training game. And I thought he looked pretty damn good there, even though the numbers were not great for him in big league spring training. He did get a fair amount of run with the Astros. Second round pick in 2022. He was a top 100 prospect at the end of the 2023 update. He did fall a little bit just because of some hit tool concerns that I just continue to come to light the more, you know, research I did this offseason, you know, just the more I watched and dug in. But at the same time, he did make some adjustments this offseason that I think could help him. But what makes Melton so fun is he hits the living crap out of the ball. Like, he's strong. 90th percentile of 107, I don't think anybody would expect from him. Can play a good center field. He can fly. What was it? How many stolen bases last year? 46
in 46. 53 attempts.
Motors. He needs to cut down on the chase a little bit, something that he improved as the year went on. I think there was one note I had in this write-up, which was he got better against breaking balls as the year progressed, and the contact rate started to get better as well. He cut the chase rate against changeups and breaking balls, and over his final 50 games produced an OPS of 870 against secondary offerings. So I mean, that's what you want to see. So you have, it might be a fringy hit tool, but you got an absolute burner. You have plus raw pop that he's starting to tap into more and more, and a high probability of sticking in center field. You may have to shelter him from lefties. That's fine. I just think that this guy's too talented to not be in the top 100.
Yeah. So Melton is a guy that, like, obviously everybody really fell in love with during the draft process in 22. He had 17 homers. He was 21 for 22 in the stolen base department at Oregon State. He comes into the big leagues, or he comes into professional baseball, the minor leagues, 23 games, had an 820 OPS. Like, he didn't really hit the ground running quite like some of these other draft guys where it's like, oh, he has an 1100 at levels that are way too low for him. But 2023, I feel like we saw what Melton can be. And are there 45 bags at the big league level? Probably not. But you've got the potential for 25 homers and 25 stolen bases, which is really fun. My question for you is, do you think he can play center field, or is this a right fielder?
No, I really do think he can stick in center. And that was the thing that put him, kind of solidified him for me, is diving into that video. I every time I saw him, he just did not get much action in center. And that's why I swear, like, the video sometimes can just do you better, especially with the outfield, but it's also hard to get reads. I know his first step's good. And just seeing the way that he can read and track balls, both over his head, both gaps, the closing speed, I think he can most definitely stick in center field and be at least average there. But I think there could be an above average glove there that takes a lot of pressure off of the bat. And that's why he's a top 100 guy for me.
There's an opening, I guess, in center field in Houston. Like, that's one of the very few places that there's a legitimate opening at, because they're probably not married to the idea of Jake Myers. And now that Jordan is playing DH full time, you got Chaz in left, like, there is space to create for Jacob Melton. He's probably not ready this year, especially for a team that wants to win the World Series. But I see you've got the 25 ETA. That could be like opening day 2025. Yes.
Yeah, he could be a September call-up, you know, if somebody's banged up and they want to give him a little bit of run as they get ready for the playoffs. Or, you know, he could be a guy that ends up being a bench piece with the speed and the stolen base ability that, you know, you probably don't hit much in the playoffs. But I could see him up at the end of the year. I do agree, though. I think this is a guy that you want to kind of take it slow. He has some unique moves in the box. He's still trying to work on mitigating some of that swing and miss and pitch wreck. I'm comfortable with him just kind of being a level each stop kind of guy. He's going to repeat double, I'd assume, this year. It's not even repeat. He got there at the end of the year and settled in. So, I mean, he's going to get his second taste of double, probably finish the year in triple. Again, if they really need it, but I think Will Profito is kind of there to be able to plug in, and they're not as much focused on Will Profito's development because he's a little bit more polished. He's older, and he got a lot of run and showed great things this spring training. Another guy that I think you could have made the case could make the big league team. I think Melton has a nice path now where no one's really in his way, but he's not going to get rushed either.
Yeah.
97, Ramon Ramirez, Kansas City Royals catcher, who has only played at the DSL. He should be at the complex this year. I know, Jack, you always just say, like, oh, I don't have a ton to add on these types of guys, but we've talked about him a lot. I've sent you some video of him. Yeah. And you know, look, people are going to ask, oh, well, where's Yoenndry Vargas on this list and things like that. And we talk about how it's pretty tough to rank. I just don't love ranking DSL prospects in the top 100 because so much can change. And also it's so early for them. Like, there's guys with Vargas, any semi-decent breaking ball slider he saw, it gave him trouble. So those are the things I'm kind of looking at, is like, how much do you stand out from your peers in the areas that most players at that age and at that level struggle with? Ramirez, it was on multiple fronts, and he's the number one prospect for us in the Royal system. The field of hit was there, and we see that, like, there's some guys that have a really good field of hit on fastballs, like Vargas of the Dodgers. But with Ramirez, hits fastballs well, but then the way he's able to recognize spin, stay back on it, drive it the other way, the way the barrel lives through the zone, the body control is really impressive. And then on top of that, like, there's a lot of questions usually about defense with these guys, right? They're so young. It's so early. How does the body develop? We haven't really seen too much run from them at certain positions. Ramirez, the receiving's already pretty darn good. The arm is pretty good. He's blocking pretty well. He looks like he could very easily be an above average catcher. I don't have much concern about him sticking there. You're already seeing flashes of above average power for his age. I mean, at 17 years old, now 18, he was putting up exit velocities as high as 108, 90th percentile of 103. And again, just, I don't like to dive too deep into the numbers, but when you're making contact in the zone at a 90% clip in those DSL games, that's already going to put you in a unique spot. And then being able to hit the secondaries, having such an advanced swing. The mechanics just were too good for me to not have him in here. I think he's going to be one of the big breakout guys this year. If he gets enough run at the complex, I think he could end up, you know, in low A and putting up some good numbers there too.
So a lot of people that are reading this list are probably saying who, but they're also like, I've seen that name, but I've never watched this guy play. I haven't seen video. I haven't even seen a picture. And like, you Google Ramon Ramirez Royals, I think there are two pictures and they're just the same photo that are reframed. But what I'll tell you from like seeing the small video that you've sent is like, physique wise, I'm not comparing production whatsoever, but physique wise, it's very similar to a young Francisco Alvarez, where he's fire hydrant-esque. And like, you can really get behind the fire hydrant kind of growing into his own, because if he was like, you know, like 180 is probably selling him short.
But yeah, I got to update that. There's no way he's 180.
No. It's the 40-man signing weight, like that kind of thing. But
he's strong.
He's really strong. He's thick. Like, there is a catcher there. You see that clearly. Some of these teenage catchers, like, they're either way too big, like Alfredo Duno in Cincinnati, way too big, or they're like, you know, skinny kids that like look overwhelmed by putting the gear on. That's not the case with him. He looks like he was made to put the gear on.
I think that's the perfect way to describe it. It's strong but athletic. I don't think he's going to like thicken out too much to be slow, but he's already really powerful. You look at the legs, really strong. I think he's that perfect balance and build that you want to see. And you know, I think at the end of the year that he was playing a little bit at the complex. They do these like additional games out there that like no one really knows about, which is kind of wild. And you know, they send a lot of their top guys out there to get reps out and just continue to get more experience. And he showed out really well against some really talented arms as well, those scrimmage, you know, Dodgers guys, things like that at the end of September. And just more of the same, where he just looked really good. Everything I heard was that he stood out. And I think this is going to be a guy that could easily be a consensus top 100 prospect by the end of the year, especially if the bat to ball continues to progress, you know, or at least translate at some of these upper levels the way we've seen it. He's a little aggressive at times, and that's something that could, you know, catch up to him against better pitching. But the other thing that I really like is he elevates consistently, and I think that's going to allow him to tap into his above average power, even if the hit tool trends close. Number 96, we got Ryan Clifford of the New York Mets, traded from the Astros in that Justin Verlander trade plus $33.5 million or whatever it was. Yeah. Clifford, 11th round pick, but don't be misguided by that. He got $1.25 million, roughly second round money to sign because the Astros went so college heavy in 2022. You get a chance to see Clifford in the spring breakout game, Jack. You could see how physical he was. I know that most of your attention was steered towards his blue glove, but we also saw him on the backfield to absolutely lace a couple baseballs. It's a really simple operation in the box, and I think that allows him to make more contact than most 6'3", 210, 220-pound, you know, big left-handed young hitters. And it, look, the power could easily be 30-plus homers. I think the hit tool is fringy, and the approach is going to need to continue to develop to hedge that hit tool. And also, we don't know where he's going to play defensively. He's split time between outfield and first base. He's got a hose for an, like, it's arguably a double plus arm. So I think the goal is that he can translate to right field, but there's a chance he ends up at first. Even if he does end up at first, which is where I think his long-term home probably is, the bat is just too exciting. And the numbers were just too good. 24 home runs in his age 19 season. There's just so much to be excited about here offensively. And that's why the Mets targeted him.
So number one, I am distracted by colors and sounds. I'm like a dog. Like, you show me a bright blue glove, I'm like, oh, I'm going to watch the glove. I'm not going to watch baseball anymore. Number two, he is one of three lefty mashers with tons of defensive questions that we are going to talk about in this grouping of 15.
Which is why they're here.
Yeah, exactly. Which is like why they're in the 186 range. And Clifford is one of the three best lefty mashers with defensive questions in the minor leagues, age appropriate. Like, they're all 19 years old. Clifford's 20.
19 to 20. Clifford just turned 20. Yeah.
Just turned 20. So, like, they're either 19 or a young 20, all of them. And, like, they have time to try and figure out right field and how to be somewhat passable there. Obviously, best case scenario, like you just mentioned, is he learns how to play right field because he's got a cannon. But at the end of the day, like, it's all on the bat. It's all in the homer output, and you see 30 homers from a guy that just turned 20 years old. He's a top 100 prospect.
90th percentile of 107. I mean, that's just, you know, big time impact. He's only going to get more physical too. Like he's not maxed out. And we got to see him really up close and personal in the backfield. So I just continue to be impressed with how he repeats his moves. It's really simple in the box too. It's really just an inward coil into the back hip, minimal stride, and does a ton of damage just off of those simple moves. Like quiet moves with loud impact, I'm always going to be excited about. 95, a reliever, probably the only like guaranteed reliever really we'll see on this list. But Mason Miller checks in from the Oakland A's. I mean, this guy, when he got an 80 fastball, he's been on our top 100 list, and he was a guy that we had on, I think, kind of before the big time breakout. One of my favorite guests on the show too, just telling his story, how unique it was. But the A's moving him to the bullpen, I love it. I mean, he has really struggled to stay healthy, and now you move him to the bullpen where I think he should have an easier time doing so. The fastball is now just sitting 101, 102. He's just going to overpower guys. But then he also has a wipeout slider. He'll mix in a cutter. I think there's less importance now on the changeup, and he can just overpower you with the fastball and the slider and the occasional cutter. I think he can be one of the best closers in Major League Baseball this year if he stays healthy, and that's a top 100 prospect.
Mason Miller, the closer. You don't leave an 80-grade fastball off of the top 100. And
you can't.
This is where the 80-grade fastball from a closer slots into the top 100. My lofty hot take is he throws a fastball 105 miles an hour within the next 2 years.
I would love that. I think it's very possible because, again, he has not really been continuously healthy. He's been working back from injury. And
we've still seen 103 when he's not continuously healthy. We get 105 from Mason Miller. Next 2 years, book it.
He's been lights out in spring training too. Has he been one of your favorite spring training watches?
I think so. It's happening in like the middle innings of Oakland A's games, so it's been tough to, you know, really stay dialed until it's...
No, just go back though, see the highlights. Yeah. I still count that as a spring training watch.
For sure. He's going to be one of those guys where it's like, you know, late night West Coast, I want to go to bed a little bit earlier. I'll wake up the next day and I will click on that game and I'll just go watch the ninth inning if I saw that he threw. Because like this guy, it's almost Globetrotter-ish.
Yeah.
Where it's like, you go to see the show, and his fastball is the show in Oakland this year.
100%. Average is 101 miles an hour on the fastball. So far this spring, he's striking out 41% of batters. It's 11 punchies in 27 plate appearances. It's going to be more of the same. He might not have a ton of save opportunities, but when he gets a chance, I think he's going to nail them down at a pretty high rate.
Yeah.
Number 94 is another pitcher. And a guy that we talked about after, you know, the spring breakout game, Tink Hentz, right-handed pitcher in the St. Louis Cardinals organization. I got to fix that. It just says weight, not the height. But it's been a little bit of a roller coaster the last year and a half. I think it's been hard to differentiate what's been maybe health versus command versus stuff, maybe not translating because he's being stretched out more. He's been one of the more difficult players to assess because he was – you know, babied, which is fine with the injury concerns and, you know, with him being a prep arm, but we didn't really see him stretched out and or challenged. So he just dominated low A probably longer than he needed to. And then as we finally started to see him get stretched out, some injuries crept in that have anything to do with him being stretched out. Maybe not. It could have just been fluky. Some of the injuries were fluky, but then he comes back. There was some talk about maybe a finger issue affecting him. And that may have impacted the command some. So he's just been a really tough read. That said, the last few times we've been able to see him, he's looked more like the Tink Hentz we saw in 21, and where the fastballs jump in. Everything kind of tunnels from that over-the-top release. The slider looks really good. The changeup looks good. It seems like that fastball slider changeup is going to give him a legitimate three-pitch mix that can make him a mid-rotation starter. The question is the command and health. And those are two things that we're just going to have to wait and see.
You just bet on the young athlete figuring it out, especially when he's flashed what he has flashed already at this point. And the fact that you could get a 60 fastball slider and changeup shows you that he can do both with his hand. And that's another testament to his athleticism. I don't know. And you watch the delivery too. You're enamored with what that could turn into if he just, you know, continues to fill out. And obviously he's been working hard in the weight room, but even two more years in a professional weight program. And it's like, hey, let's get you eating the right things. Let's get you doing the right exercises. what can that turn into? And I think he can turn into somebody that is small in stature, yes, but electric stuff out of the hand, like kind of like what we've seen from Jared Jones, right?
Absolutely. And here's just an example of how difficult he is to assess. I mean, in the span of a month and a half last year, we saw him average 98.5 in a start. And that was a five inning start. He averaged 98.5 miles an hour on his fastball. And then a handful of starts later, we saw him average 92 on the fastball. So like, but then two starts after that, he's averaging 95.5. So the fluctuations were tough.
Yeah. 98 Tink Hentz is a top 50 prospect in baseball, probably. 92 oh, yeah. Tink Hentz is well outside the top 100. So yes. Where does like the middle ground Tink Hentz sit? And the answer is right now is in the mid 90s.
Because the shape, I think it's a great point. The shape is kind of average, but from that release in the mid to upper 90s, it will be a plus heater. In the low 90s, it's going to be an average heater. So that's an aspect of it. And also, I really do think his fastball sets the tone for everything else, right? When you have to worry about that over the top heater, and then you've got the changeup and the slider that looks just like it out of the hand and then cuts in on you if you're a lefty or dives away from you if you're a righty. The fastball really sets that all up and makes a big difference.
Yeah.
Another Cardinal. We stack them here unintentionally, but it's just they're so close in terms of value. And I think even Cardinals officials would tell you the same thing. TK Roby, this guy, again, there's been spurts where I see him and it's like, holy crap, this guy is nasty. And then there's been spurts where it's like, okay, there's a lot of fastball reliance here. Is the command going to be there? And some other questions. At the end of the day, the fastball is really good. At least I think it flashes plus, but it's closer to above average. The flat VAA, I think maybe it helps it play up closer to plus. The downer curveball off of that, it's a tunneling nightmare. Right. But he's trying to figure out which between the slider and the changeup are going to kind of make that leap for him as the third pitch. And the command's still a work in progress. Another guy that has struggled to stay healthy. When he is healthy, we see him really start to get these nice stretches going and then maybe has a flare up and that limits him some. But I do think this fastball could tick closer to plus. If you have the plus fastball curveball, good chance he's at least a good reliever. But I do feel like the Cardinals are hoping he can be closer to a three starter. I think he settles in somewhere as like a four starter if that command can get closer to average.
Curveball. That's the one. Like when his curveball is right, when the overall command is there, that thing is like impossible to touch. But I think the fastball curveball combination is almost like depleted in value when his command is not right. And then it turns into not a nibble act, but more of like a timid approach, I guess, to facing a lineup, especially as he kind of climbed levels. But when he's got fastball curveball working and he can go fastball at the top of the zone from that flat angle that you're talking about, and then the curveball, you mentioned how it works off of that. Like, again, the north-south thing, it's a really good north-south combination.
Which is, to your point, 100% the reason why he racked up a 33% chase rate on his fastball and a 33% chase rate on his curveball.
Because you start guessing vertically. You can either guess horizontally or vertically, and he's a vertical guy. It's actually harder to guess vertical.
Yeah, 100%, and that's been the problem. I mean, if he can find that third pitch and or just get the curveball command to the point where he can just lean on it heavily, I think we'll see a little bit more of that starter's profile to him. But right now it was 55% fastball last year. He commanded the fastball really well, but the rest of his arsenal, I mean, we're looking at sub 60% strike rate, actually well below. Yeah, not well below, but 57% strike rate on all of his secondaries. It's got to be better than that to reach that mid-rotation upside, but still really like the talent here. A great get by the Cardinals in the Jordan Montgomery swap as well, alongside Thomas Ajayi, who we're a couple days away from talking about here on the show.
Yeah.
92, another recently traded player. This is kind of like the trade range here too. Mm-hmm. Another player that we got to see one last good live look at on the backfield. Some a few times in the final week, here before we put out this episode, put out the list. But Luis Angel Acuña, shortstop, New York Mets. He's small. I think, when you get to the backfields, you can really see like the frame of guys a lot better and everything. But he can pack a little bit more of a punch than I think he gets credit for. The swing looks a lot like his brother, which I honestly don't love because that his brother's Ronald Acuña's swing is not something you really duplicate. Like, it is really hard to do. You got to be a freakazoid and extremely powerful to create that much whip from that hand position and the barrel turn and still create that much bat speed. That said, Luis Angel Acuña has gotten better and better with that. And we've seen more impact. I think we've seen a little bit of a subtle adjustment to him being his own version of his brother's swing. And, you know, we've seen him elevate more. We've seen him start to hit the ball harder. We've seen better swing decisions. And that was another reason why he was one of the key pieces that the Mets targeted here. What makes him a top 100 prospect for me is elite stolen base skills. I mean, he's going to be up there with just about anybody with his ability to swipe bags. I know the Mets don't need a shortstop, but we're talking about this when we were at the spring breakout game. The misconception is, I think people hear Luis Angel Acuña is going to have to move from shortstop because of that Lindor guy there. And they take it as, oh, he might not be the best shortstop. He is a good shortstop. I think he might be a borderline plus shortstop. Yeah. He might have to play second where he'd be elite. Maybe he plays some center. We've seen some action there. I think he's a super utility type that can play really good defense at a lot of different spots. Haven't seen enough run in center field to have an idea, but I'd imagine he could get pretty good there pretty quick with his speed and just the instincts he has for the game. Above average hit. It's going to be fringy power, but he hits it hard enough to split the gaps and I think mix in some homers. Going to steal a lot of bags, can play good defense at shortstop or at multiple spots. Top 100 prospect.
Yes. So Ronald's swing is very flat, right?
Yes.
Like the way he pumps balls out, the way he hit 40 last year is by hitting balls 121.3 miles an
you
hour.
You are spot on.
Yeah. So, you know, like when he was hurt, right? Like when he was coming back from that ACL tear, it was like a 60% ground ball rate.
Yep.
So that's probably the issue. And hey, if there's anybody in the world that can replicate Ronald Acuña Jr.'s swing, it's probably little brother because
yes.
They came from the same set of parents. So like I'm not discounting him because of that swing. It's just there are a lot of ways that swing can go wrong, especially if you don't hit the ball 121 miles an hour. And this is that guy. But if he can tweak it just enough to be unique to Louis, where he can start going gap to gap and he can elevate just a little bit more, that is where he unlocks that new level of offensive value. He's never going to be a 25 homer guy, but he can be a guy that can have 30 doubles in a given season because mm-hmm. he hits the ball hard enough from a swing that stays in the zone for a very long time. Mm-hmm. And if you make it just a little bit less flat, that unlocks a new world, I think.
I think you nailed it. I 100% agree with that. And I think he's trending in that direction, right? You're not going to do it overnight, but we saw the biggest thing was he was a drifter too, like weight on the front foot. And again, another thing, if you have freak bat speed, you can get away with that premature forward move. If you're not a freakazoid, it's a little bit harder. He had an OPS of 599 against fastballs 94 plus in 2022. And then in 2023, he upped that to 763.
That's awesome.
A big difference. It's a yes. big difference. 5% jump in contact rate, cut the ground ball rate by 5%. So it seems like he's already starting to make that adjustment that you just alluded to, Jack.
Yeah.
91 is another Jack McMullen special, and we'll get to him in a moment. But before that, a quick break.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right. This is another top prospect sponsored by Jack McMullen. Lazarell Montes checks in at number 91, Seattle Mariners prospect. Is it fair to say that this is like one of your favorite prospects in baseball?
Yes, because he's hilarious in the sense of take all the defensive concerns for Ryan Clifford and blow them up, but take the power for Ryan Clifford and blow them up.
Yep.
It's amazing. Like he's a 19-year-old that, I mean, you've got on the defensive write-up, like gonna be a DH. So you have a 19-year-old DH that hit the ball 118 miles an hour when he was 18. Like alien.
What you did to sell me on Lazaro was, you know, I think the defensive limitations, I mean, and that's generous. I mean, I watched the defensive video. I felt like I needed a seatbelt, you know, to watch that. But he was faking deeks, which were hilarious. He's charismatic, dude. And I know that doesn't matter here, but like, he's going to be a guy that if he turns into the player that I think people can hope that he can be, and the power continues to translate, he's going to be a fan favorite. He is funny as hell. I love the way that he plays the game, and he has fun out there, which is awesome. But I got very caught up in the swing and miss, because there's plenty of in-zone swing and miss and the defensive limitations. But you pointed out the production and how rare it has been to see from an 18-year-old. Really, we haven't really seen many guys at all. And if you look at the list of players that have put up the numbers that he has put up at the levels that he put it up at his age, it's a short list of guys who have had a ton of success in the major leagues. So that aspect of it is important. The power is unteachable. 118.4 mile per hour max at 18 years old is a joke. His 90th percentile is, you know, I think the highest of any 18, 19-year-old, you know, in minor league baseball last year. And look, the swing is good. I think it's just a matter of length, and he's going to continue to just get better at making consistent contact, but more consistent contact. But he can get away with below average contact rates with how hard he hits the baseball, as long as he can continue to improve the approach. He's not Yordan Alvarez. And I know that he trains with Yordan Alvarez's coach. That's good, because it's going to help him, you know, yes, in terms of there's not a lot of coaches that know how to work with a Lazarell Montes or Yordan Alvarez type.
You know what that's going to do? It's going to help him attack and pounce on pitches in each quadrant of the strike zone. It's going to help him feel more comfortable impacting every ball in all four quadrants. Is he going to do it to the level that Yordan can? No. That's gift from God stuff for Yordan.
He's a plus hitter.
Yeah, like Montes has gift from God stuff in a different way. It's not the hit tool gift from God that Yordan has. It's the you can run into it and produce a sound and make a ball go farther than really anybody else on the planet can.
Without being Josh Mears. So it's still a testament to his bat to ball. For how powerful he is at his age, it is impressive bat to ball. But Yordan is, I don't know if people totally realize how rare Yordan is. In terms of the power hit combination,
it's once in a lifetime.
It really is. It really, really is. So that said, Montes, I mean, it's 40 home run upside. And the second I thought about that, I'm like, how many home runs can this guy feasibly hit? And the answer was 40. You know, if he hits enough, that guy's got to be in the top 100, no matter what his defensive position is, even if there is no defensive position. So he's top of my list of guys I'm excited to watch this year, by the way, too.
And I will say patient, not passive, is another pro for Montes.
Yes. And I think he can continue to be more patient. I think he will, because he's going to realize that's the best thing he can do for himself. But not passive. He wants to let it eat. And he can also hit pitches out of the zone, which is important too, because he can do damage even when he makes a bad swing decision or not a great swing decision. He can still really pummel a baseball, which is huge. Yep. Number 90. Addison Barger. Oh, it even came with a GIF. If there's one player I wanted to have a GIF, it's probably him, just with his swing. Addison Barger, Toronto Blue Jays. We talked about him recently in the Blue Jays system. This is sponsored by me pick. But this is a guy that I think we're probably the only people that have him in a top 100 list going into this year. So this is kind of just like calling our shot here. I just think he's going to have a huge year in AAA. And I don't know where he fits in on the big league level, but I think they'll find a spot, especially if IKF is IKFing. But Barger, we talked about it on the episode, dealt with an elbow issue. He even talked about how he felt as though that elbow issue impacted him more at the plate than actually throwing. Then I really fell in love with the aspect of he can play third at a decent level, but also can play right field at a pretty good level. So if you're going to be an average defender, you can be an average defender at two spots, That's great. Hits left on left well. Just pummels baseballs, dude. Like, he just hits the crap out of baseballs. And you see a swing with a lot of moving parts and a lot of violence, yet he makes a fair amount of contact. So the improvements he made bat to ball wise, the power that we know is there, the ability to now play right field at a decent level. I know it was a down year, but I thought he did a lot of things last year that really helped solidify the foundation of his profile. And now I think it's just a matter of elevating more. And I think he's going to do that this year. I mean, there's a lot of upside here, and a guy that doesn't need to be protected from lefties and who can keep himself in the lineup by playing third. You could put him at short in an emergency. He's not a disaster there. Can play right. I'm sure you could throw him at second if you wanted to, but he might throw the ball through the first baseman's head with his plus-plus arm.
Yeah, no, I mean, he. I will say that there is so much ferocity in his hips. Like, not often do you talk about a guy's hips because, like, it's all just one fluid motion, right? But hips are very important to hitters. This is one of the few guys that I think the casual fan can see. Look how quickly he fires his hips. Like, that dude is turning and the bat follows with so much of a vicious feel. And, like, yeah, it took you selling me for me to, like, accept that he was a top 100 guy. But you know what, like, really was the nail in the coffin was the spring breakout game. Like, he had balls where he hit incredibly hard and the sound of the bat was incredibly loud. And it's like, okay, how many guys in minor league baseball are you getting this sound from and that result from? And the answer is not many.
Yeah. I love the point you bring up about the rotational explosion. A lot of guys that have that rotational power can get spinny, right? I want to do damage and I'm a rotational guy. Okay, I really want to hit the ball. I'm going to leave it, right? I'm going to pull off it because that's how I pack a punch. His path and the way that he's able to enter the zone so deep, if you can see the GIF too on YouTube, but if you look at an Addison Barger swing, he enters the zone so early and he's able to have so much like separation from, you know, his front side and his backside to where the bat just stays in the zone forever. He doesn't get spinny even when he's getting his A-plus swing off, which he gets off a ton. I just think that this bat's too good. The improvements bat to ball wise. I'm another guy that I am amped to see this year. I think he's going to launch balls in Buffalo this season and be back on people's top 100 lists.
I love it.
89, Bryce Eldridge, the outfielder, not the two-way player anymore of the San Francisco Giants. And it was tough to try to peg where he should be. Also, I did notice for those who are watching on YouTube, I do need to update a couple of the plate discipline grades on some of those other ones. I will fix that. But Bryce Eldridge, 6'7". I like that they're focusing on the offensive side of things for him because this guy can get up to the big leagues a lot quicker if he's not worrying about pitching. I did like him as a pitcher, and I did think he had a legitimate chance of being a two-way guy. But you have a 6'7" guy who's way more advanced than any – it's a very rare profile, but way more advanced than most hitters that are that tall and prep guys, right? Like, the bat to ball is better than a lot of guys you'll see with that kind of build. The approach is really good. He drew plenty of walks, has a good feel for the zone. He's already run into some big-time EVs. He hit one on the backfields, 111, off of Shota Imanaga. It was a terrible pitch. It was a hanger way up, and he pulverized it. But there's some swing and miss because of the long levers. And that's my one concern here is a spin. I could see him having that O'Neill Cruz type of like swinging over it frustratingly. But I think he has a little bit more body control at this stage than Cruz did in spurts. What's the defensive home? He has a cannon for an arm as well, similar to Clifford. But he does not look great out there just yet. He split time too between outfield and first base a little bit. I think he could end up at first base, but the bat is just so good. And projectable that, you know, that's what makes him a notable prospect. But if he can play right field, and I think there's a chance he could play a passable right field, then that really helps him too.
Where do you feel like he hits the snag? Like, hey, he's playing, you know, low A ball on April 5th. Is it elevated heaters? He's too long to get him right now at 19 years old. Like, where does the adjustment need to come if you were going to look into your crystal ball?
That's a great question. And you know, that stuff can be difficult to peg sometimes. I think there's a little bit of concern about, you know, like so many young hitters is that ride up, but that's pretty hard for anybody. I think more for me is can you stay on those breaking balls, or do you have that, you know, you can close your eyes and picture that O'Neill Cruz and Ellie De La Cruz waving over those breaking balls where they just really never had a shot. So that's a little bit of a combination of pitch recognition, but also, you know, can you control your body even when you're fooled enough to be able to stay behind the baseball? And a lot of these 6'7" guys, long levers, when they're a little bit fooled and that breaking ball is coming, they just have no way to be able to adjust and get a better swing off on those. So I'm more concerned about him getting spun to death, I think, you know, with his big body and the long levers, because he has shown the ability to be compact to the baseball and, cool. And be pretty efficient.
Love it.
We'll go to number 88. And now this is another Jack McMullen favorite. Dylan Head, outfielder of the San Diego Padres. We were worried that he may be on the move in that trade. You know, when we looked at Dylan Cease going over to the Padres, because Dylan Head, Chicagoland kid, really talented. I know that the reports were that the White Sox were in on him. You'd hope so, being that he was in their own backyard. But I think the Padres really like what they've got here with Head, and you know, they would rather move Iriarte, who we'll get to, you know, not too long from now, and also Drew Thorpe, who they just added, who we'll get to in a couple episodes. But Dylan Head, what I love about him is you can see the potential for plus hit. You got elite run times. You get the ability to be a great center fielder. And then beyond that, like, there's more thump there, I think, than most players with this profile. He's already flashed some decent EVs, and he's going to get more physical. That's what really puts him over the top for me is there's a lot, again, a lot more thump than you'd expect from this type of speed and contact profile.
Yeah, you know, the one thing for me is like, okay, so you've got 45 present, 60 future on the hit tool. How quickly does that develop? And frankly, I would have been worried if he was actually part of that deal, because the White Sox, how good are they at developing young guys? Like, I don't know how much of that was already given with Colson Montgomery versus, you know, what have they nurtured in Colson Montgomery? I think Colson was probably a more advanced hitter than Dylan Head at this point.
Yeah. But I mean, he's just special.
Right. He's just special. And like, there's a reason we're going to talk about him, like maybe even next week. Right. But Head, I would be worried if he wasn't in the right organization. He's in the right organization. And this is the organization where the freak athletes come to feast. And, you know, like, I do think that there's a way, yeah, he could grow into more power, but the hit tool for me kind of turns into the end all be all. And I feel like this is the right organization to foster that hit tool blossoming to a 60.
I mean, look at Jackson Merrill. Every time there's a draft cycle and there's a swing that I love, I feel like the Padres take that guy. Or I haven't seen a ton of the Padres pick. I watch and I'm like, I love this guy's swing. Yeah. It's going to translate. And Dylan Head's another one where just the swing is so advanced for his age. He's going to be, I think the floor is higher than most prep bats that you're going to see. And then again, there is enough thump there. And I love the situation for him too, as you mentioned. This is a guy that I think will have a lot of helium this year. And the approach being good too, he should, I think, make a pretty smooth transition into, you know, more of a full, his first full pro season. And, you know, yeah, there might be some pitch recognition things here and there with spin, but that's like to be expected from any young prepster, especially cold weather kid too.
So there, real quick, there are very few organizations that you can view as like tiebreakers. If you like a prospect the exact same, the organizations just off the top of my head that you can truly view as a tiebreaker, and it's like, okay, this guy's in one of those organizations, this guy is not, I'm going to take the guy in the organization that I deem a tiebreaker. The Padres are a tiebreaker. The Dodgers are a tiebreaker. I think Tampa for pitching is a tiebreaker. Who else?
Guardians for pitching.
How about Yankees for pitching at this point?
Yeah, the Yankees program they've got going on right now is I'm subscribing to that too. But yeah, I agree. There's just a few. That'd be a great episode. We should do one of these days.
Yeah. Who are the tie breaking organizations?
Yeah. And what do they excel at? I think would be a lot of fun. But I'm with you. I think that's it's a great point. 87, Anthony Solomito. I always want to say Solomito. I don't know why. Left-handed pitching prospect, Pittsburgh Pirates. A guy that you should see by the end of this year.
I think so.
I think maybe even by the mid part of the season. What really sold me on him, you have a funky lefty with a good fastball, nasty slider, changeup's a work in progress, but he also has variations of the fastball, one with a little bit more ride, one with more, you know, run, and gets a ton of ground balls. He gets early weak contact, but misses enough bats. The extension is fantastic. And he gets kind of reverse splits, which is great, because you know, you're going to see more righties and lefties are naturally going to be uncomfortable against him anyway. So that was the one concern. I'm like, okay, fastball slider, how does he get righties out? But because of the funky release, righties have to wait even longer to see the baseball. So that helps him, I think, really have his stuff play up. The tick up in velocity was pretty much all he needed to really hit that next step because he's so funky. And so now it just seems like it's combining to make hitters extremely uncomfortable. And at 21 years old, he was 20 years old last year. He just carved through high A and put up some pretty good numbers in double A. And what stood out to me too was he kind of ran out of gas at the end of the year, eclipsed, you know, the highest innings total we've seen from him. And even with his velocity down from 92, 93 to more 89, 90, he was still getting outs and still effective. So knowing now that I'm assuming he's going to be back closer to 92, 93, maybe even 94, he's going to be able to get guys out just consistently. Still only 21. I just feel like it's a good balance of floor and ceiling. If that changeup can come along though, then you know, he could be a problem.
Yeah. I feel like I'm not allowed to say this anymore because we've seen Gerrit Cole and Sandy Alcantara go down recently with elbow issues, but he has the build to shoulder a heavy workload. And like, again, I'm probably done saying that about pitchers, but I would say that about Skeens. I would say that about Robbie Snelling. And I'm going to say it about Solomito. Like, he's much bigger than you would expect when you watch him on television, but he's 6'5". And, you know, he pitches using the entirety of his weight moving down the hill with that unorthodox delivery. I don't want to anatomically break down like what he does, but it feels like it's easy on the elbow. And having said that, like he's probably going to have elbow issues because all these pitchers have elbow issues. It just sucks. It sucks. But like his delivery and his build do scream durability.
It does scream innings eater. And his arsenal screams innings eater because yes. He pounds his own. His last 15 appearances or starts, 24% K rate, 6% walk rate, filling up the zone. But what I love is he has the four seamer that gets him a little bit more whiff. And then he has more of that sinker that gets him a lot of early weak contact, which allows him to pick up ground balls, 56% ground ball rate in that stretch with that pitch. And then of course that slider, he commands the living crap out of. Like that was what also stood out to me too, is, you know, over his final 15 starts, talking about a guy that landed his slider for a strike 73% of the time from that release point. That's absolutely crazy. So really impressive stuff. I think he's going to continue to build on that this year, especially if the velocity, you know, holds up there. I think you're going to have another guy that just is a fast riser and another big name pitching wise in this Pirates system.
Love it.
Last but not least, Detroit Tigers, Kevin McGonigal. This is just one of my favorite underrated lower level hit tool guys. He was a comp A pick, 37th overall by the Tigers, using those savings with Max Clark to go get McGonigal. And that's what I think justifies the pick because at least a little bit because of just how safe he is, McGonigal. I think this is a potential better than plus hit tool. In terms of just how advanced he is bat to ball wise, it's remarkable. He's a little bit more compact, but he moves so well in the box. Has, I think, as good of a feel for the barrel as just about anybody, maybe any prep bat in that class last year. Unbelievable approach already. Great pitch recognition skills. Hits lefties, sprays the ball over the field, and can still sneak some impact in there too. I do think there's a potential for 10, maybe even 15 home runs. So the other side is, oh, well, does he stick it short? I actually don't think he's bad at short. He might ultimately move to second base where he'd be a really solid defender, but I think he's passable at short right now. That he moved his feet pretty well. The arm was good enough, good instincts. If he can stick it short, then he's really going to climb quickly in terms of prospect status. But when you have a better than plus hit tool, you have plus plate discipline. And that's, I think, did we talk about that on the front top? We probably didn't even talk about it, but no more raw power. We're talking plate discipline and hit tool. And we'll explain that more in the next episode. But, you know, I thought present game power and future game power was kind of, you know, taking care of the raw power side. I thought it kind of made it redundant. So, and I felt like hit tool kind of gets undermined a little bit because you could have a guy that has phenomenal bat to ball skills and a brutal approach. Right. And he might not hit for a great average, but he is good bat to ball. The plate discipline undermines it. I wanted to be able to illustrate that a little bit better. But when you have a guy like Kevin McGonigal, who's potential 60 hit, then you already have plus plate discipline, I feel even more confident in his ability to hit for average and get on base, above average runner. It's really hard to poke a hole in this guy's game.
Yeah, 100%. He has yet to be blown up in like any video that I've seen of him. And you've probably watched every single one of his professional ABs and as many showcase ABs as you've seen, whether it be like, you know, with Team USA in any capacity or any like perfect game showcase where he's seeing a first round type talent. He's never looked overmatched. He's never looked like a teenager. And that is insane. And I know that you have in here that, you know, he has excelled against elite competition on the summer circuit. And that's important, man, especially with like these Northeast high school kids. You just never know what they can do. But we 100%. Have an idea and it's exciting.
And I think we saw flashes of enough impact there too. It's definitely gap to gap, which is enough. But then I think there's even more there. I love that you brought up that point because I'm pretty sure I wrote even somewhere in there where
I think I watched every single at bat.
Yeah. And I was like, you'd be hard pressed to find a bad at bat. I didn't really, you struck out a couple times, but I didn't really see one bad at bat throughout like his entire pro debut. And it's been more of the same in backfield stuff and everything I've heard from a few within the Tigers organization. Like they're gushing over this guy. And I think he's going to be another guy that's consensus top 100 by the middle of the season because of how good the bat to ball is, how good the approach is, enough impact. We'll see where the defensive home is, but even then, I still think that the bat to ball is just going to carry him there with some sneaky athleticism too.
Nice.
That'll do it for this episode. We are going to be kind of just chunking through these 15 at a time, and I'm really excited to do that. So stay tuned, and we'll be done by the end of next week going through each of these. I will try to do some Q&A stuff and answer any questions that you have. We'll probably do a mailbag after the top 100 comes out to just do a top 100 theme, or sorry, after we're done with all these episodes, yeah, to do like a top 100 themed mailbag, answer your questions as they pertain to the list. But also a reminder that we're really excited about the subscription stuff that we have going on with the bonus subscription episode every weekend as well, or early in the week as well. It's either going to be on the weekend or Monday, Tuesday. Most of the time it'll be going out on the weekend, where we'll be doing mailbags where we guarantee any subscribers will get their questions answered. And then the other three bonus episodes every month will be heat sheets, keeping you up with what's going on in the minor leagues, data, standouts, everything you need to know, and just keeping you up to date on just about everything. So really excited about that, but more excited now to just continue to churn through this top 100 list. Thank you so much for listening. As always, look forward to continuing to fly through this with you as we progress through this week and next week. And we look forward to talking prospects with you on Wednesday.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.